Welcome to Big Broadway Energy, the podcast with your host, Stephen Reardon. That's me. Thank you for being here, podcast listener. That's you. When I say I can't do this without you, I mean it. I mean, I could, but it'd be so boring. So thank you. Thank you for being here. One of the greatest gifts of this podcast is not only do I get to meet some of these incredible local artists that I have been fans of for years and years, but I also get to bring old friends back and hear what they've been up to and sort of how they're taking the world by storm, talk to them again, and let them know how much I admire and respect them and what they're doing, because this business is fun, but boy, is it hard. Today's guest is one of those people who I met years and years ago, and I've just been so excited to see her succeed and all these things that she's doing in the world, you know, for herself and for her art, but also to educate the world a little bit about some of the struggles she's been through, and it just really is an inspiration. So I'm so excited to welcome on the pod my friend, Gabrielle Leonore. Is that correct, Gabrielle?
Lenore. Yeah, it's my middle name.
So middle Lenore. Name.
Lenore, like the Edgar Allan Poe, Nevermore.
Nevermore. Okay, this, got
yeah,
it.
My love, Lenore, that's how you say it.
And we really are friends, but she used to go by her last name, which is why I should have asked that before we started.
Oh, I'm revamping my entire life.
Oh my God, I love it. Well, welcome, Gabrielle, to Big Broadway Energy. We're so happy to have you.
Well, thank you for having me.
So we go way back. We met in community theater. We actually met in, there was this great acting school that our friend Andy Matheny started, and she used to let me come in and sub when she was busy. Gabrielle was one of the students that I got to meet then, and it was a really cool like group of people, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. No, I love that class, and I'm still friends with people from there.
Yeah.
And now I'm at Greenlight Cinema Station 12, so that's like the new...
With Eugenie, yeah?
With Eugenie, yeah. I shouldn't say new, but a continuation of what that was before, I guess, in a way. Is that fair to describe
it? Sure, yeah.
So I'm back into that. I'm actually doing a long-form improv class right now with them, so that's been a lot of fun.
So did you go back to school because you wanted to kind of learn something specific, or did you sort of miss the classroom environment?
I think both, especially after the pandemic. So during the pandemic, it was very much batten down the hatches. What am I going to do with my life if I can't do theater or acting?
Sure.
So that's when I went into beauty school and became an esthetician. And then out of that, I became dually licensed as a massage therapist. So that's my day job. But I still, you know, I love theater. I love art. I miss being with other actors and collaborators. So it's just great to get out there, meet friends, and also do something that makes me slightly uncomfortable, like improv. So
it's so true. You know, it's so funny. I love improv, but I'm so bad at it. And I've tried so many times to, like, you know, be like those people we admire, like the Tina Fey's of the world, right? Where it's like, I just wish I could be as free as some of them are.
Literally, Tina Fey was exactly who I wanted to be since I was like 15 years old. Like, since I watched 30 Rock, I'm like, that's going to be my life.
Yeah, that's you.
And
right.
In a way, it's kind of happening.
Oh my God. We're going to talk about why you're here, because I think it is such an awesome thing you're doing. Before that, I want to talk a little bit about the first show we did together. So during COVID, these theaters that were here in Tampa Bay, we were all so hungry to like get back on stage. And we were like, how are we going to do this? How is it going to happen? And so West Coast Players, which is a great community theater over off of 19 in Clearwater, was going to do a show called Almost Maine, which is this great show, quirky love story. And there's different vignettes about people in love or coming out of love or just existing in these weird little moments. And we did our first reading in the park because we couldn't be close to each other. And we did rehearsals with masks on.
No, I remember rehearsing with the masks. And then the dress rehearsal, they're like, okay, you can take the masks off now. And then I was, for those of you that don't know me, I'm doing my best because I have a mic close to my face now. But I could be loud and obnoxious, especially on stage. And so they take the masks off and I am way too loud, like lines that shouldn't be that loud was like way off, and even like Ashley, the director, was like, yeah, you could like soften up here. I'm like, no kidding,
you're kidding, right?
Because our voices were muffled by the mask.
Totally.
And then trying to project with not something gagging your mouth,
also,
that's
like
a little harsh, but you
it's
know
true.
It's tough. Yeah.
And then like we had to be in, there was like intimate moments, had like these moments where we had to be close with each other, and we're like, is this safe, are we gonna be okay, you
oh
know
my God,
it was
especially
so crazy.
Our scene, because we were supposed to make out like a bunch of times, but we couldn't,
and then take our clothes off in the end of it, like it was so funny, but we ended up doing
yeah,
it right?
We did it well, and it was really funny too, because like he literally taught my acting class, and then here I am like, oh, I have to be in love with this man, and I haven't had physical contact. Actually, that's not even true, but
it was so
it was
fun.
Funny. No,
oh
it
my
was
god,
great.
We had such a great time.
Yeah, I got over it,
and I really loved being on stage with you. You
oh,
know,
thank
you really are so talented. So you've come far since COVID. We all have, but you've been working so hard to get to where you want and need to go. You're doing a show for Tampa Fringe that's going to also go to Edinburgh, and it is so fascinating. But before we get into the actual nuts and bolts of the show, I want to talk a little bit about the unique challenges you face as an artist living and existing with autism, which is something you've been living with your whole life.
Thank you. So the reason why I'm bringing that up is it's an integral part of the show, for starters. And then secondly, so if anything, I kind of prefer being called an autistic artist versus an artist with autism.
Sure, okay.
Because, you know, for instance, like, I wouldn't go up to you and be like, oh, you're an artist with gayness. Or, you don't say,
I've
like...
I've heard that before, believe it or
but
not.
But doesn't it sound more homophobic or
absolutely,
more...
Absolutely, absolutely. No, thank you of approaching, you know, people in the world.
Absolutely. So even little things like that, you know, and it's basically, I can't imagine anything without, I guess, that perspective, because that is how I live.
Sure.
But then there are times where I think I made the joke with somebody too. It's like, oh, well, no matter what character I'm going to play, they're going to have these parts of me because I'm a person playing that.
Sure.
Even
absolutely.
If it's not written as an autistic person, because there's a lot of characters, they call them like, oh, these persons are canon when it comes to being autistic. Even though they don't specifically outright say they're autistic, they show those traits. And usually they're through like the misunderstood genius or like the manic pixie dream girl, like those tropes. Like a mm-hmm. lot of autistic people either relate, or sometimes it's like something that's projected onto us, especially that trope. I feel that.
For sure. Can we talk a little bit about, obviously, and we don't like to make this podcast super political, but it's hard to stay away from politics right now when they're being so polarized. And, you know, we have heard recently from some new political leaders talking about how autistic people don't have jobs and they are never going to leave their house and they're never going to pay taxes. And for someone who does not have autism, who hears these things that are so prejudicial, I'd love to hear your thoughts on what that feels like for you, who is someone who is autistic, who lives in the world, who pays taxes, who has a job, who lives by, you know, not with their parents. Like, tell us about what that feels like for you.
Well, first off, those specific words were very hurtful, not just for me, but what really killed me about it was it's the idea that unless you are contributing to a capitalistic society, then you don't matter and should not exist. And that is a very disgusting, dangerous, slippery slope to go on, because, you know, depending on who you ask, I could be like the model autistic person because I am doing those things. It's the people that are not able to, like, they deserve to live and they have a right to exist because
and
they
be respected.
Exist and be respected. And I feel that it is my responsibility, as especially as someone that is low support, to give a voice to those that aren't able to, you know. It's also funny too, because it's like when I talk to people about it, you know, they say like, oh, but what about all these like really great people like Bill Gates and Einstein, like all these people that are autistic, what about them? It's like, no, what about the people that, yes, they have their struggles. Yes, they have the more severe cases. They, you know, it just promotes eugenics. I don't know if that's too, you know, edgy for this podcast.
But it is what it is.
But
though.
It is. Yeah. And yeah, so I can't just stay and be nice about it. I mean, my very existence is political. And so is
Amen.
My piece. So I like to say their worst nightmare. And I also posted a poem on my Instagram and also my very first TikTok. Last time I checked, it went over 900 views. So go me.
Nice. Go.
Thank you. And especially when like a certain someone said we can't write poems, I'm like, okay, bet. So I posted, it was actually a really fun teaser for my show where I did write a poem specifically to RFK and what he had to say. So that was something that I felt compelled to do as well, because, you know, as an artist, I have to make art. And that's pretty much the thing that's keeping me sane in these troubling times. Because if I didn't have that, oh boy, I would not be as calm, cool, and collected as I am now.
And like so many people who exist and succeed in spite of challenges, you are elevating your art and your storytelling in such inspirational ways. I want to talk about the original show that you've conceived, written, and are performing at Tampa Fringe and the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, both this summer. Let's talk about My Life as an Inspirational Porn Star. My God, what a title.
Oh, it's been a long time coming. So essentially what It's so funny too, because like I love my grandma specifically, because she's like, Gabby, I don't know how I could tell my friends you're a porn star. How am I supposed to explain this?
And when I first saw the title, I'm like, I'm going to have to ask her because I didn't know. And what you told me was like, it blew my mind. It was such a great, great title.
Yeah. So essentially what it comes down to, it's like, there's levels to it, but it's also just a great satire in general in the sense. So inspirational porn is the idea. It was from Stella Young, I think that's her name. She has a whole TED Talk. She's a disabled comedian and basically describes the news stories that you'd see on the news where it's like, oh, they look at this boy with autism graduating high school, or oh, look at this football player taking the girl to Down syndrome to prom. Oh, like anything that's like pulls the heartstrings in the sense of like especially a lot of, you know, autism speaks specifically where they're, you know, like, oh, these poor children, like, oh, the children, which is another reason why what a certain person said was very frustrating. It's like, oh, the children are greatest resources, not the children.
Yeah, it's just exactly such nonsense.
Exactly. So that's what inspirational porn is essentially. And so I took that concept and twisted it or turned it around to be being like, well, I am the star of this inspirational porn, hence I am an inspirational porn star. And the other aspect of the show too is I play myself, or at least a heightened version of myself, as if I am a washed up child actress.
Love.
Because a lot of people, when they think of autism or autism awareness, it's like, oh, you know, all these children, we got to find things for the children. But once we grow up, they don't really care anymore. Yeah. That's when we're burdens to society, you know? So that's kind of the fun little inspiration behind my inspirational porn star life.
And you wrote this play as a one-woman show. You wrote it really because you had such a history, a rich history of living with autism and sort of having to exist in the world that way. But this is sort of is it a fictionalized version of your life, or is it sort of a elevated version of your life?
I would say elevated, because the stories that I'm describing are true. I talk about not just my childhood, but I focus primarily on the not safe for work stuff. So, you know, there's candid anecdotes about sex, drugs, among other things. And just basically saying, like, I am a grown adult woman, and yes, I have a disability, and yes, I'm still hot and can date and do all of these.
And boy, and you came here and makeup ready, girl. You are ready to rock today.
Thank you. you always got to, the hair and makeup, I'm telling you.
You got to show up.
That's also part of the mask, too, which is the leaning into. I do enjoy makeup, of course, but there is that aspect of, you know, they joke like, oh, makeup's our war paint, and also, you know, the pressure of looking a certain way, or being presented, especially as a woman specifically, which is a very underutilized, but overlooked aspect of autism too, because it doesn't manifest necessarily the same as in men. And most people think of, you know, Sheldon Cooper as like the token poster child of autism.
Sure, yeah. Things. Like, you know, not dumbing down, but like letting the gen pop know, like, there are different kinds of autistic people in the world that are successful in ways that don't have to live on a certain island. Not every high-functioning autistic man is Einstein or Sheldon Cooper. Not every single high-functioning autistic woman lives a certain way. And I think what's great about what you're doing for this show is you're humanizing us and reminding us all that we have more in common than different, right?
Absolutely. Like, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. And I also want to touch upon, like, I know you said high functioning, which...
Was that wrong too?
I'll explain why. And
I'm
also
sorry,
explain
Gabrielle.
The show. No, this is why the show's super important. And I don't mean it in, like, an offensive way, but essentially where the label, and I have a whole bit where I talk about this in my show, but the labels high functioning and low functioning came from Dr. Hans Asperger, who was an Austrian scientist in the 1940s, which means he was a Nazi. Mm-hmm. And so,
which is why Asperger's is not really a term that's used anymore.
Absolutely
correct?
Not. No, because it is so, it's another form of eugenics where it's like, oh, this Asperger, the higher functioning, this is the ideal person that we want to move in society. And of course he focused on young white boys. Mm-hmm. And so those that were deemed low functioning, they were basically killed, like euthanized. So Now we say, instead of high functioning, we say low support. So, you know, they don't need as much support as, say, someone that needs high support.
Got it.
And I also talk about this in my show, too, that the problem with labeling people, especially children, as how well they can function, it ends up dehumanizing them. And as we mentioned before, the problem what we have with RFK is we're limiting disabled people's worth to what they can contribute in a capitalistic society. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, how much accommodations do they need versus not need?
And thank you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for educating me. I hope that you will be able to do that for so many audiences in Tampa and also Edinburgh, because we're also going to the Edinburgh Fringe, which is like the coolest festival in the world.
It's the largest. It's honestly, it's a very surreal dream come true. It's just a huge opportunity. My favorite shows like Fleabag and Baby Reindeer were originally one person shows from Edinburgh. Will I be the next Fleabag? I don't know, but you can say you saw it first at Tampa.
I think you'll be the first inspirational porn star.
That, yes, I will take that.
I mean, I love that it's such an individual and, listen, I'm a playwright. I've been writing plays for 20 years. I love when a writer takes something that is of, like, common or popular culture and makes it their own in a way that's so different. To your point about Fleabag and Baby Reindeer, like, mm-hmm. those things were born in truth of those artists, but they presented them in a way that was totally new and unique.
And my show, too, is it's essentially like a love letter to my inner child, even though I'm talking about very adult things. I'm pretty much doing all of the things that I think would be really fun and cool for me to do. I think that's also the most important part. The most important part is that I'm having a lot of fun with it. And at the end of the day, that's the most important part. And I think that's been like a big theme of this year. Ironically, as terrible as the world events have been, if it's not fun, then it's not worth it. And that's why we do what we do, because it's a dream to be able to get paid for something that's fun.
My Life as an Inspirational Porn Star plays this summer at Tampa Fringe from June 14th to June 22nd. And tickets are available. So you can get all of the information about this show and all Tampa Fringe shows at festival.tampafringe.org. If you've never been to a Fringe festival, do yourself a favor. It is so much fun because basically, it's like venue after venue of just like brand new things, and you can pick whatever you want to watch. And it's like, I don't know, for artists, it's like a dream come true. It's like a playground.
Oh, absolutely. And it's never a boring day, honestly. Most of my Saturday and Sunday shows are matinee. So it's like once I'm done with my show, I get to watch
play.
Which is definitely the idea. And I've also seen some of the other artists' work, and they're also creative and funny. And you even get people internationally.
Totally.
Honestly, there's always something new and exciting, and things that you wouldn't, you know, people are too scared to put in like a regular theater sometimes.
100%.
So it's definitely highly come out, and especially we need all the support we can get because our governor isn't too happy about the Tampa Fringe.
No,
so
we have to keep on reminding ourselves we're in Florida for a reason. We have to be the ones that are the heroes, right? Because
yeah.
people are trying to take it away, and we have to be like, we have to show up like X-Men and remind people we're in charge.
Oh, I actually love that you said it like that, because a lot of people, you know, especially my age, were on the fence of like, oh, like, should we go to Atlanta? Oh, should we go to New York? Like, what are we doing? But there's still so much here that
so much
haven't even been tapped yet.
Agreed. And that's why I came back to Florida, because mm-hmm. I feel so in love with this community, but so a part of the artistic community that I, you know, when I was in New York, yeah, it was cool, but I didn't feel like I was part of anything. Here, I feel like I'm part of something.
So more than just the weather?
More than just the weather.
Okay.
Come on. Okay. So before I ask you my last question, which I ask every guest, do you have any socials you'd like to plug, or do you want people want to follow you on TikTok?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram at Gabby, G-A-B-B-Y, Cab, C-A-B-1-3. That's where I'll be posting some of my shows. The TikTok, I think, is under the same handle. I would think those are like the two best ones.
I'm still on Facebook. I'm starting a theater company and they're yelling at me. Everyone's like, what's your socials? I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to do another social thing. I'm too busy. Okay, before I let you go, last question. What does art mean to you, Gabrielle?
Oh my gosh. Art is essentially what makes the world go round. It gives life meaning. This is also a very cheesy joke. Maybe I made it up. Maybe I heard it from somewhere. But it's like the earth without art would just be eh.
Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your talents with us in Tampa Bay. Please go see My Life as an Inspirational Porn Star at Tampa Fringe. And if you're in Scotland this summer, go see it in Edinburgh.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear listener, for joining us on Big Broadway Energy. Listen to the radio show of the same name at 10 p.m. on Sundays or 4 p.m. on the replay on Saturdays on both RadioSt. Pete.com and St. Pete Sounds, respectively. If you or someone you know would like to be on the show and you think you'd be a good guest, email me, will ya? I'm at bigbroadwayenergy, all one word, at gmail.com. Until next time, friends, be kind, be curious, keep creating. Bye, everybody.